makeup.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
An absolute masterpiece. A masterpiece. From Garrett Cole, as the Astros advancing in Game 5 of the ALD. I can't begin to express how unbelievable it was. Really not unbelievable, because he's been doing this all season long. But just in that setting, in that particular moment, to put on that kind of show again, where the focus and everything is on a magnifying glass, is like a laser beam from the sun, all of the attention, and Cole just continues to do it again. This isn't a Tuesday night in July. This isn't a Saturday night in August. This was a must-win game for the Astros. This was a Tampa Bay team that had a lot of confidence. Even though Justin Verlander was on 3 days rest, they got to him in Game 4. They made it a winner-take-all moment where pressure is so different, and Cole acted like it was no other day than any other day he's pitched for Houston. A masterpiece. Two hitter, 8 innings, 10 strikeouts, just one run, a home run that he gave up in the second inning, and that was it. Plus, when you get the fact that Houston got 4 runs in the first inning, that was it. That was game over. We talk about the St. Louis Cardinals putting up 10 runs in the first inning against the Atlanta Braves and everybody feeling like, well, this game is done. You're not going to score 10 runs. It'd be a miracle comeback to score 10 runs against the Cardinals in that setting. It's just too much. And that was the same feeling I had when the Astros scored 4 in the first and then Garrett Cole hit the mound. That the Tampa Bay Rays, that might as well have been a 14-run deficit. They were not going to get 4 runs off of Garrett Cole. And Garrett Cole was not going to get into the bullpen early. Again, a complete masterpiece. And this is something that the American League Championship Series now has in terms of the power versus pitching of the Yankees and the Astros. And that's the series most of us wanted. This is not to knock the Rays, who had a great year and had showed up in this series when many thought that they'd get swept. Congratulations on a fine season. But baseball for baseball, it's the Astros and the Yankees. We've been wanting this. We get it. And now we get to see which of the forces each team has is going to come through and prevail. We'll talk more about this game coming up next. It is a Friday on SB Nation AM.
This is SB Nation AM. On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation AM, SB Nation Radio. On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. So we get the Astros and the Yankees now. Thank goodness.
Thank God.
This is no offense to the Rays, good team, fun team, but... Ah, come on. I mean, this last night, watching Garrett Cole just mow them down, you just wonder, oh, wait, how will this work against the Yankees in the ALCS? And we're going to get it. Garrett Cole has been remarkable. I mean, look, I said it at the top. He treated last night's game like it was any other game that he's been pitching. The Astros have not lost a game since mid-July when Cole has taken the mound. He has not lost at home since late May. That's an amazing run. An amazing run. You get the sort of attention that you get in a pressure situation, right? A game 5, a game 7, whatever it is in the baseball playoffs, things get really tight. The calls that you're going to make between you and your catcher on certain batters really have to be right. Any little mistake can be magnified by a factor of 100. And Cole was as good as he's ever been at any point during the season. It was standard Garrett Cole stuff. It was absolutely great. And as I said earlier, it was a masterpiece. And the Astros giving him a 4-run lead in the first inning, that was game over for the Rays. I mean, even though they got the run in the second inning, that was about it. It's just, it's too hard to get runs off Garrett Cole in the first place. So you're hoping you chase him. Hopefully you can get him, get in the bullpen, but that wasn't the case. He went 8 solid innings, 1 run, 2 hits, 10 strikeouts. Osuna comes in to lock it up, and the Astros win the series. And now they get to face the Yankees, who've been off since Monday as these teams adjust their pitching. Now, here's the thing. When you go to the NFL, for example, and you know, the guy who touches the ball the most is the quarterback. And let's say you have a quarterback like, Patrick Mahomes, for example, and he's dealing with an injured ankle or he's got something wrong with his shoulder, but he's not getting benched. If he struggles, you could fall behind quickly. You could lose a couple of games while he's figuring out a slump, right? If LeBron James all of a sudden can't score points, the Lakers are going to lose games if he can't figure out how to score. In baseball, it's so different because you can have a moment like the Astros did in game four, in which they had Justin Verlander on 3 days rest and the Rays tagged him and they won the game and they tied up the series and they had all the momentum and everyone was like, whoa, look out for the Rays. But in the end, as that old saying goes, you're only as good as your next day's starting pitcher. The Astros just went, okay, fine, we've got Gerrit Cole. And now all of a sudden the decision to pitch Verlander on 3 days rest and any other little tiny mistakes that AJ Hinch has made in the series are gone because Cole provides you eight solid. Rays had nothing for that. They couldn't get any runs, really any other runs across except for the one solo home run. And then that's it. And so that's what baseball is, why it's so unique, is that the guy that's very important to the success of the game can override so many deficiencies in the game. Gerrit Cole could have provided Houston eight solid innings if the Astros had only one run across the board, right? If the offense was really struggling against a bevy of Rays pitchers, that Gerrit Cole still keeps them in the game. And now you get Zach Greinke going in game one, Justin Verlander going in game two, and Cole gets to pitch a very pivotal game three at Yankee Stadium. And I say pivotal because think of the circumstances that could happen in the first two games to the Astros, right? They could be down 0-2. As the Yankees could win both games on the road, so you got Gerrit Cole to pitch a game three to stop the bleeding. The Astros can be up 2-0, meaning Gerrit Cole comes in game three to try to put sort of enough cushion so that you have, to win one game out of the next four. Or, and this is where it's really can become interesting if the Yankees get a split, meaning it goes 1-1 in the first two games and then go back to Yankee Stadium, maybe feeling momentum, feeling the home love. Now you've got Gerrit Cole again in game three that can also kind of calm things down, shut that door, and give the Astros more of an edge. Now, if the Yankees get to Cole, all of that's off the table, but right now Cole is the best pitcher in baseball, right? He's been dynamite. I mean, the numbers in this postseason alone have been fantastic. In the two games against Tampa Bay, Cole has faced 54 batters. He has struck out 25 of them for a 46% strikeout rating in the batters that he's faced in these two games. He's only allowed six hits. He's only given up one run. And more importantly, 52 swings and misses against the Rays. Meaning these are strikes that the Rays are chasing. 52 of them. The opponents are only batting 118 against him. The Rays batted 118 against him. This is incredible. These numbers are unbelievable for postseason baseball, where again, you are through the magnifying glass of how your manager views you and the pressure of the moment. These are historic numbers. And this is the weapon the Astros have against the Yankees in a very, very important game three, no matter what comes out of the first two games. The thought that you could have him twice in this series against the Yankees, it's if I'm New York, I have got to figure this out. He's the key to winning this series, right? Because Verlander and Greinke are not going to lose twice each. And now you've got to find a way to get Gerrit Cole. And if that means trying to figure out to get him deep into his pitch count, good luck, because he's throwing strikes. If it means tagging him and getting some hits and shaking him up, good luck, because right now nobody's doing that. Nobody's been doing that this season. And this is a really daunting task for the Yankees. And it sets up a monstrous ALCS, a monstrous series. I think this is going to be great. But let me ask you this, Ron. Would you be surprised if the Astros won in five games?
Not at all.
No, really. I mean, that's what this pitching staff can do to you. Given all the strengths of the Yankees being able to hit the ball out of the park throughout the lineup, and I can't emphasize this enough, it is throughout the lineup that they can hit home runs. If the Astros win in five, I would not be blown away by this. It's unbelievable how good this pitching staff can be. I mean, we're only talking about Verlander's bad outing in Game 4 because, for the first time in his career, he went on 3 days rest. Had they started Jose Urquidy in Game 4 and brought in Verlander if he started falling apart, then it would be a different story. But if Urquidy gave him, let's say, 4 solid innings and let just mid-relievers take over, I mean, how dangerous is this baseball team? It's amazing the series went 5 games. Really, it is. It's amazing the series went. God, props to the Rays.
Yeah, I mean, they were scrappy.
Very scrappy.
They knew how to hang in there, and they got the most out of what little they have.
And think about how dangerous the Rays can be now. They still have a very, very small payroll. But if they have enough money to squeeze out a good free agent, another good free agent on top of this team that won 96 games, I mean, you don't have to break the bank. You don't have to go get a free agent pitcher for $300 million or whatever. You don't have to break the bank. You just add another quality player at any capacity to this Rays team. And with the small budget that they have, if they can just squeeze out a few dollars for another player, they become a very threatening baseball team.
Yeah.
In the future.
But on the flip side, when you look at the Astros and what they got to start spending, I don't know what they're going to do with Gerrit Cole.
I have no idea either.
Yeah, you back up every truck you have, every brake truck you have, because what he did last night was just insane.
Really insane. And to be honest with you, I knew he was a very good pitcher out of Pittsburgh, but I didn't think he was on this level of a good pitcher.
No, neither did I.
Right? I mean, this is different. I mean, look, he's a quality ace. I'm not saying he was a nobody coming in or he just had he had a very good career in Pittsburgh. And he went to the Astros and it was that same feeling like, oh, they bolstered the rotation. But not this good. I mean, not this incredibly good. He's won his last 18.
Yeah, it's just complete dominance. When you step up. My favorite thing last night was watching the post game MLB on Fox with right. A-Rod, Ortiz, and the Big Hurt, Frank Thomas. And A-Rod asked Ortiz the question. He said, listen, it's like, we're all hitters. What do you do with a guy like Gerrit Cole? And David Ortiz simply responded, choke, poke, and hope.
Yeah, sure. That's a great way to put it.
I mean, because he said there's no answer. And David Ortiz held up this cue card. He's like, when you have stats like this, he's like, there's nothing you can do. And it just showed that 17-0, like one earned run, strikeouts, I mean, too many to account for. It's just amazing. My son, who's a pitcher on his baseball team, was just in awe watching Gerrit Cole last night.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Watching the movement on this ball.
It really is awesome. It's amazing. I mean, just... He has 351 strikeouts in 228 innings between the regular season and the postseason.
This is insane. There was one tweet that did make me laugh, though, is that he's in a slump. Gerrit Cole's in a slump because there was one inning where he didn't get a strikeout.
That's right.
Which snapped a 73-inning streak of getting at least one strikeout in each of those innings.
These are such historic numbers.
Innings.
He has 25 strikeouts in 2 postseason games.
Yep.
You have to go to Bob Gibson in 1968, who has 27 in 2 postseason appearances.
And that's the matchup we're all looking
for. It's the second most of all time.
I mean, the only bad thing about the fact that he had a pitch last night is that we don't get to see him until Game 4.
That's right.
But when he gets into Game 4...
Oh, in the Yankee series, he should go Game 3.
You think so?
Yeah. He should go Game 3.
What do you think? Greinke, Verlander?
Yeah, it's going to go Greinke, Verlander, Cole. That's the way it's been projected. It hasn't really been locked in yet, but that's the projection.
First one I saw was Greinke, Quintana. I actually can't pronounce Quigley. What is that?
Oh, Jose Urquidy?
Yeah, Urquidy. I'll learn that guy's name, I promise. I'm an Astros fan now. I will tell you this. When the Astros did jump out to a quick lead, scoring all those runs in the first inning, their bats kind of went silent there for a little bit. I did have that feeling like, guys, did you guys watch the Dodgers game last night?
Yeah.
Like they jumped out to a quick lead, thought they were in cruise control with Walker Buehler on the mound. Just don't bring in Verlander.
That's right. So you got game one of this series. Let's see. You got game one of this series coming up.
Saturday.
Sunday, you've got game two. You got Tuesday, you've got game three in New York. That's enough rest. He'll be good. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Yeah, that's 4 days rest. You'll go Gerrit Cole in game 3.
God, that's just
And again, as I said earlier, that's a pivotal game in the series, because no matter how, whatever happens, either 2-0 or 0-2 or 1-1, the Astros have a chance to go to New York and make what, however they want to do it. I mean, whether it's to sort of end the bleeding or just get an edge, right, or just kind of put the foot on the gas. I mean, Gerrit Cole allows them to get that opening game in New York, regardless of what happens in Houston. It benefits them tremendously.
Yeah, but I don't see the Yankees get back. Greinke had his bad game.
Right, I don't either. And in order for, if the Yankees can't beat Cole, they've got to beat Verlander and Greinke twice.
Yeah.
And that's not, I just don't think it's going to happen.
I don't see that happen. I mean,
I just don't think it's going to happen.
You know, Greinke had his bad game. He's not going to make the same mistakes. He's going to be more fired up to pitch on Saturday.
That's right.
To make sure he doesn't make those same mistakes again, or whatever he was doing that the Rays were able to hit off of him. I mean, yeah, that's a dangerous situation for the Yankees to have to face.
Absolutely. All right, we got to Thursday night football last night as the Giants and the Patriots played up in Foxborough. And the thing about the Patriots that you really now have to start really paying attention to next on SB Nation AM.
Listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, one out of every four batteries will fail this winter. Get yours tested for free during Superstart Battery Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts. If it needs to be replaced, O'Reilly is a Superstart battery for you. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. So the Giants and the Patriots last night, Thursday Night Football, the Patriots won 35-14. If you were watching the baseball and didn't really have time to watch that game last night, it was very sloppy. Very sloppy game. The teams combined for 6 turnovers. And Daniel Jones threw 3 picks. He also lost a fumble. But the Patriots defense, and I'm not playing fantasy football this year, Ron, because nobody invited me. I feel like Rudolph.
Hey, I'm not playing either.
What is the Patriots defense doing this year in terms of fantasy numbers? It's going to be unbelievable.
It's a little ridiculous, I think.
It is ridiculous.
Which is scary, because their offense still isn't clicking right.
Once you've got Bill Belichick now calling defensive plays, this is a defense that is shutting people down. And look, they haven't been playing, they haven't been playing the elite of the elite. But even that, would it matter? Like, don't you think they would do the same thing? They wouldn't embarrass Patrick Mahomes per se, but they'd make it difficult for him.
I don't see a team beating them right now.
With that defense, it's hard to score enough points.
And like I said on Tuesday, I mean, we always do our top five, bottom five on Tuesday. It's getting to a point where when we do our top five, we're going to be like, we're going to do 2 through 6.
Yeah, because the Patriots are just sitting alone at the top.
And the gap keeps widening each week.
This was an interesting game last night because, again, the offense of the Patriots wasn't all that stellar. I mean, the numbers kind of skew what actually was occurring. I mean, Brady did throw for 334 yards, but he didn't have a touchdown pass. He had a pick. It wasn't like the Patriots marched up and down the field against the Giants. And New York was actually in this game, just as the Patriots, they were trailing by 7 at halftime. And then there was a scoreless third quarter. And then, so you're thinking going into the fourth, well, the Giants can get a touchdown. Maybe something fluky can happen. But then the Patriots, you know, scored 14 points, another Tom Brady sneak for a touchdown run. And the Patriots pulled this one away. But it was not a stellar performance by the Patriots. This wasn't a 5-touchdown gem of a game by New England, but its defense was pitching a great game. It was playing a great game. They got a defensive touchdown. They got a special teams touchdown in this one. 2 miscues by the Giants resulting in 14 points for the Patriots. And New England goes to a beautiful 6-0 on the season. Well, the Giants fall to 2-4. Now, Daniel Jones did have 3 interceptions, but he did have a beautiful pass to Golden Tate for a touchdown. But you know what one of the conversation pieces coming out of this game was, is late in the game, there was a pass interference that wasn't called.
Yep.
And now, so in the Giants challenged it, and then it went to New York, and New York went, yeah, that wasn't called, and that was the right non-call. When you watch it, you go, like, my God, he was being held as he was going up to catch the pass. He was being grabbed. And if this is how this is going to be, then dump it. because I'm getting tired of this. Every week, this is the story.
Well, it's the narrative has changed, at least. I mean, the NFL is no longer worried about us questioning what's a catch and what's not a catch.
That's another one,
so,
yeah.
I mean, I guess, you know, that's the silver lining in this all?
I guess so. I guess so. Because now, listen, they've messed this up now. Because we thought, okay, this is going to be much better. Once you add replay to this mix, this is going to be better. This is, you know, pass interference is an iffy thing in the first place. It doesn't really have some sort of huge definition. It always feels objective by the refs. Like, that guy just got mugged. Yeah, but it wasn't kind of the mug to which would require pass interference. And then you see a pass where a guy barely gets his jersey touched. It's like, yeah, well, what are you going to do, right? He can't touch him. Here's the flag.
Yep.
Move up all the way here to the 22-yard line.
You know, honestly, it's like last week we saw a couple roughing the passer penalties.
Right.
Where... You know, there's one in particular where the guy got flagged, and I think I'm not remembering what team it was, but he tackled him around the waist.
Oh,
the quarterback just released the ball, and as he was releasing it, the linebacker wrapped his legs up and brought him down. Nowhere, I mean, I'm looking at it, it's like, I don't see where roughing the passer is. I literally just do not see it.
I think there is this feeling by refs that you get this mindset of these rules to protect the quarterback, and then they go overboard protecting the quarterback without, you know, and I know the game is at full speed and they don't have the benefit of replay. I get all that. But I think these refs are sort of using, you know, their brain is telling them, boy, that was vicious.
Yeah.
And then they just
exactly.
go, here's the flag, right? Rather than going, wait a minute, it may look vicious, but if it's technically sound, I can't throw the flag on this. I can't throw a flag because the quarterback got sacked, right? And then it looks like he got drilled in the process. Like, you just can't go down that road.
And that one pass interference that you were talking about last night, I don't see how it's not.
Right. Yeah, it was Jonathan Jones grabbed him.
The ball is thrown his way. And Jonathan Jones, I mean, literally spun the guy around.
Yeah, it was really blatant. I mean, come on. It was really blatant. And I know it was late in the game, and it was like 35-14 right. or whatever it was.
It's not Saints Rams blatant, but it's like the one notch below that.
Yeah, it really should have been overturned. And I always wonder when it gets to New York, when these calls get to New York, okay, now you have replay. It's okay to say, "Guys, you missed this one." That's what it's supposed to do. If you just keep upholding these calls, you can't have a system in which we as fans believe in it. We don't believe you fix this problem if you keep doing this. That was the whole point this offseason, right? The conversation that we had from the time of the NFC title game to the Super Bowl was pass interference is now an issue. Is something the league has to look into. They've got to fix this. The Saints probably deserve to be here at the Super Bowl, and we've got to find a way to make sure this doesn't happen again. Okay, so how do you do it? Well, here's the technology. But it doesn't feel like 5 weeks into the season that we fixed this, right? That we've got a system in place that we all go, yeah, you know what? This is cool. This is better. When you feel like you've been, you know, obstructed in your pursuit of catching the ball, then we have replay. Or you feel like you've made a great defensive coverage play where you weren't interfering, but you made a great play that may look like interference, but it wasn't. Then you're going to get justice in the replay system. It doesn't feel like that's going to happen. It doesn't feel like that at all. It feels like we don't know. Like that looks like pass interference. Oh, no, it's not. Or that doesn't look like pass interference. Oh, I guess it is. It's back to that same thing. And this is embarrassing for the league because if you've got technology and you want to use it so that we feel like you've got a good handle on it. Now, last night didn't feel like they had a good handle on it. That looked like a very blatant form of pass interference here. And I know, listen, I ain't breaking this down like the Zapruder film, okay? I mean, look, it just, even to the naked eye, it looked like pass interference without the help of replay. But then when you get replay, you're like, this really is pass interference. But the Patriots go to 6-0 nonetheless. Is the Giants, very depleted Giants team, had an opportunity down 7 going into the fourth, but the Patriots end up pulling away and go to 6-0 on the season. It is SB Nation AM, SB Nation Radio. Continuing more conversation for Major League Baseball in the postseason next on SB Nation AM.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. Tonight, the NLCS begins at Busch Stadium, Cardinals and Nationals. I've gone back and forth on this one. I don't know who's going to win this one. I kind of like Houston against the Yankees because, as I said, I marveled at the pitching. I don't know who's going to win this one. Cardinals and Nats. Kind of like the Nats. They're kind of spunky and play well and play hard. And the Cardinals do too. So I don't know. I don't know who's got this one. It's going to be Anibal Sanchez against Miles Michaelis in game number one. But it goes to show you the Nationals, I got to tell you, their story this season, it has been great. Bryce Harper went to Philadelphia for the big money. The Phillies loaded up. They got Andrew McCutchen, right? JT Realmuto. They've got Aaron Nola pitching, but you know, they tried to put some arms around him. And then what did they do? They went 500 and Gabe Kapler got fired. And the Nationals lose Bryce Harper. And you feel like, oh man, one of the best players in the game is leaving the team. And they had the great rise of young talent like Juan Soto, still has Max Scherzer, still have Steven Strasburg, and turned a season around and made the postseason. And then won a series that a lot of us didn't have them winning at all. If they, you know, the Dodgers were juggernaut of a team. And now they're going on in the NLCS. And for the Cardinals, an up-and-down season, fought till the end to win the division. Good, you know, obviously, they've got Paul Goldschmidt and talent on their roster as well. No, there's no hidden, you know, there isn't some player playing above his head, if you will, or a pitcher pitching above his head. This could be a really good series. But the Yankees and the Astros, I just think that's the meeting we wanted. The NL is, it's not the meeting we kind of anticipated, but I still think you get a good series there. You know, if the Rays had won the game last night, look, there's still plenty of storylines with the Yankees and the Rays, division rivals, etc., small market versus big market, and also the fact that in Tampa is a very hot Yankee fan base, a lot of New York transplants down in that area. Also, the Yankees practice down there. George Steinbrenner lived down there. The training complex is a big deal to the economy of the St. Pete, Tampa area. So the Yankees do have a strong fan presence, but this is a better series. This is the best series, as you get the quality of the Astros pitching, plus the fact that they can also hit against the Yankees, who the pitching has been an issue, and they do get good quality starts from guys. But you know, some of the guys that you're going to be talking about going up against the Astros in Verlander, Greinke, and Cole are Masahiro Tanaka, James Paxton, Luis Severino, right? I mean, J.A. Happ. I mean, some of the, you know, it just doesn't stack up. But what the Yankees can lack in terms of pitching, their bullpen has been fantastic. And they still have a role as Chapman coming out to close games. So you can chase a Yankee starter, but you've got a good bunch of middle relievers for the Yankees. And of course, Chapman closing it out. And the bats for the Yankees run nine deep in terms of being able to hit. I mean, they really do. There's really not a lot of weaknesses in the Yankees lineup. The problem is that the Astros do have that same thing too. We can focus all our attention on the Astros pitching, and rightfully so, because you're talking about two potential Cy Young Award winners, but two, I mean, one of them is going to win it. And then you also throw Zach Greinke into that mix. Cole is historic, as we mentioned before on this show. But also look at their lineup. Springer from the leadoff spot. Altuve's hitting. Alex Bregman. The list goes on and on of guys who can produce and hit and produce runs. Yordan Alvarez. I mean, it goes on and on and on. So where the Yankees can have the edge in terms of the plate and the bats, it's not that much over Houston, but Houston has a big advantage in terms of pitching. So while I wouldn't be surprised if this went seven games and a kind of down-to-the-wire game at Minute Maid Park, on the flip side, I wouldn't be surprised if the Astros won this thing in five. I'd be very surprised if the Yankees won it in five. I think the Yankees' only way to win this is to try to figure out how to get to Greinke, maybe a little bit of Verlander, maybe you catch a break and get to Cole. Meaning, and look, the only way you really, the way Cole is pitching, I think the only way you get to Cole is if your starting pitcher against him plays up to that same level of pitching. A little bit of this occurred in Yankees history. You go back to the 96 World Series, and you had the A's with all of their tremendous starters. And then the Yankees would get really good quality outings from their starters. The Game 4, for example, they had Kenny Rogers on the mound. That was a pivotal game in the 96 World Series, and he was able to, you know, stay, you know, keep the Yankees in the game. So Larritz hits the home run and then the Yankees win. And then they had this Game 5 showdown in which a young Andy Pettitte went up against John Smoltz, and it was like pitch for pitch. So the Yankees have done this before where they've gone up against a Braves team that had good pitching. Now they'll go up an Astros team that has very good pitching night in and night out. If you get your starter to sort of keep you in the game, meaning it's not getting out of hand, Cole is shutting you down, but your guy is shutting them down a little bit too, and then all of a sudden, let's play a little bit of bullpen game. That's really the way the Yankees can get to Cole. But their best chance in this series is to get to Verlander and Greinke whatever way possible, and the fact that I just mentioned that is easier said than done. This becomes a hard series. So this is the time of year. Listen, baseball, I think, I love postseason baseball, don't get me wrong. And I was so anti wild card because I'm more of a traditionalist when it comes to this sport. I was wrong about it. I think the wild card is as entertaining as you can get in terms of a postseason. It's very unfair, but who cares? Right? I mean, who cares? Every team that is vying for a wild card would take the one game shot. No one's complaining when you get in the one game shot because you didn't have a season that warranted winning the division. So just getting in is just getting in. But it is completely unfair because it's one game, one moment after 162, and it's almost like an extra game. Like we're not even giving you a series, like even a best of three. We got this one game shot to get into everywhere everybody else is. But the divisional series, they're entertaining and they're wild, and it's five games and anything can happen. But this is where I think baseball makes its real money. In these championship series, and especially now in the American League, you can go back to April to figure this one out. Before the Astros even got Zach Greinke in their trade, you could have said, man, it looks like if I could get Astros Yankees in October, I would take it. Now baseball has got Astros Yankees. Cardinals Nationals, my God, you would have found, I mean, I don't know how many people thought the Nats at 19-31 would make the playoffs. With no one. Bryce Harper, nobody. They had a bullpen that was blowing games every night. But that's why it's a marathon, not a sprint. That's why you can figure it out. You got some time to figure it out.
Is it just sad? I mean, this series just doesn't have that same punch.
No, it doesn't. And it's sad too because there isn't a better baseball town in the country than St. Louis.
Yeah.
I mean, and so you've got a great historic franchise in the Cardinals, a crazy baseball town in St. Louis against a team. And here's the thing. Washington, the D.C. area is going nuts for the Nationals. They finally won a series in their history, right? So you've got some enthusiasm for the series, but it doesn't pop because there doesn't seem to be an underlining thing you're looking for in this series. Miles Michaelis against Anibal Sanchez, I don't know, flip a coin. I have no idea. I mean, both of these pitchers are good. Both of these teams have got good lineups. But when I get Astros-Yankees, okay, so I get Zach Greinke in game one for Houston. How well is he going to pitch? What will the Yankees, how prepared are the Yankees to face him in terms of their lineup?
Well, that's it. I mean, we're looking forward to Astros pitching versus Yankees bats. We've been waiting for it all season long. This is the one that at the beginning of the season, this is what we've been talking about. It's finally happening. And now, I mean, that's where all the excitement lies, is just seeing what, you know, how the Yankees bats handle the Astros pitching. Because you're arguably looking at a modern day murderer's row with the Yankees versus probably the greatest rotation that's ever existed for the Astros.
Yeah.
With the Nationals and Cardinals, I'm looking for what's that X factor that'll get me excited? And I can't find one right now.
Right. And you know what? The team who emerges from this, in this ALCS, they're getting home field advantage in the World Series.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a daunting task for either the Nationals or the Cardinals to face either one of these teams in the World Series, even if the NL had home field advantage.
I mean, I know it's cliche to say it, and you know, I'm not even wanting to say it, but I feel like I'm going to say it. I feel like the ALCS is the World Series.
Yeah, it kind of it does have that feel to it. But every time I've done that, yeah, the other team wins.
Exciting happens.
And then I go, oh, okay, maybe I was wrong. We like in like Super Bowls. I do this all the time with championship games, yeah. AFC, NFC. You go, this is really the Super Bowl. Who cares who's coming out of the NFC or the AFC?
The reason why I think you and I do that is because during the 90s, that was the case.
Yeah, the late 80s and 90s. Yeah,
the NFC
it was.
Championship was the Super Bowl.
Yeah, you don't have to go back far. I mean, it was. There was a run. I bring this up all the time to young people. I said, listen, I said, there was from the Washington Redskins. No, I'm sorry. The Los Angeles Raiders beat the Redskins in Super Bowl 18. And the AFC didn't see another Super Bowl title until John Elway beat the Green Bay Packers in Super Bowl 32.
Yep. 18.
That years. Is a run. That is an incredible run. Think about it. You could be in kindergarten and graduate high school and never see the AFC win the Super Bowl during that stretch.
There were some.
Right. There were some who saw that.
And it wasn't the fact that the games were, you know, close. There was only one close game, really.
Yeah, it was a beatdown. I mean, there were so many blowouts in that run for the NFC. There was the Giants and the Bills, but the Cowboys took care of the Bills twice. Redskins beat them up pretty good. The Bears beat the Patriots. You've got the Giants crushing the Broncos. Washington crushing the Broncos. 49ers crushing the Broncos. I think there was two. I think the Niners-Bengals were a Super Bowl 24.
That was a close one.
Super Bowl 23. That was a close one.
And that Niners-Chargers game, that was close, too.
If I remember
the way I want to.
I was at a friend's house playing ping pong at halftime. I was downstairs in the basement playing ping pong.
I remember so many games going over to people's houses for Super Bowl parties, even when I was in junior high school. And by halftime, we were all doing something else, like having our own football game in the backyard or just hanging out by the chip table. And you know what? The only good thing that came out of those was the rise of the Super Bowl commercials.
Yeah, that's
because
right.
Because those were more entertaining than the games
itself. Than these games, yeah. They were, oh, God, were they bad. They were bad. That was a great run for the NFC. Remember, there was all that talk about, we got to realign this thing. We have to realign this thing. This is over. Like, we cannot have conferences anymore. We have got to realign this thing. it was a really dominating stretch. It really was. Yeah, the more I think about it, I'm trying to go through the games real quick. There really just were two. The Niners drive to John Taylor and then the missed Buffalo field goal.
Yep.
And I think it was pretty much it.
That was it.
I think it was pretty much it before
everything
the Broncos.
Else, I mean, I guess the only other close one would have been Broncos Redskins if you watched the first quarter.
First quarter, where the Broncos were up 10-0. And then second quarter, that was pretty much it.
28-10.
Exactly.
How did that happen?
All right, again on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Hit us up on that. Got a lot to get to. Got college football as well. All right, thoughts on Florida. One quick thought on Florida LSU coming up next on SB Nation AM.
Listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, this hour of SB Nation Radio presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. I've been with my wife for 22 years, and for the 22 years that we've been together, she has been an avid, crazy Florida Gator fan. You've heard me mention this many times. So she doesn't necessarily follow deep college football thoughts and trends and things like that. She just wants to know, is her Gators good? You know, are they good? Are they going to win? Are they going to be okay this season? What's wrong with them when they don't? What's great about them when they do? And together, we have watched quarterbacks like Jesse Palmer, Doug Johnson, Tim Tebow. I mean, you name them. They were, you know, all following the Danny Werfel path from the 90s. So this game against LSU is a big, big deal because both teams are unbeaten. Both teams are in the top 10. But what she doesn't understand, what I've been, you know, explaining, like, she is still under the mindset of old, which is you lose, you're in trouble, right? You lose. If you want to win a national championship, you have a problem. And that's happened before. You know, Florida's had really good teams, but whoops, they lose to Auburn on the road to a last second field goal. And now they can't, and they lose to Tennessee at home or whatever it is, she has seen this time and time again where a loss is just, that means no national title. And the one time that they did lose early in the season, Tim Tebow saved the day and they did win a national championship. But this is different. This is now under a different scheme. Think about how much house money Florida has got in this game. They don't have to win to be competitive for a national championship. They do not have to beat LSU at night in Death Valley to get to the playoff. The team they have to beat is Georgia. They've already beaten Auburn, right? If they go 1-1 against the two West opponents, they're in good shape. All they've got to do is beat Georgia and keep the momentum going and get to Atlanta. And then let's see where the chips fall. This loss, if they lose to LSU on Saturday, they are still in the driver's seat to win the East. Well, I wouldn't say driver's seat, it's still going to be Georgia, but think about that new reality of college football in terms of pressure. The pressure is really on LSU because they've got still an incredible schedule ahead of them. And they cannot go into games against Auburn and against Texas A&M and against Alabama with a loss to Florida at home. But Florida, they can lose and still get in.